climb water. Choose your own adventure.
Mahalo, welcome to SlimeWire episode 2819. We're back, baby. This is your host,
Mahalo.
This is your host, Tritonti2. I'm broadcasting out of Portland, Oregon. I'm, of course, joined by my co-host. Would you like to introduce yourself?
That's Ike Mensensei coming to you live from Shikoku, Japan, everybody. It's great to be back.
It's great to be back. We took a little hiatus because I was moving, and this is kind of notable because I was moving out of the apartment that we used to live together at. The apartment where I discovered Vaporwave and where I forced you to vicariously discover Vaporwave through me.
Yes. You forced Vaporwave on a lot of people in that apartment.
Yeah, we had some bums living on the couches.
We terrorized them. But it was much Vaporwave was had at that apartment.
It was the most Vaporwave days of my life. You, of course, made the next level Vaporwave plunge by moving to Japan.
Yes. I surprisingly bought into the advanced Vaporwave package by going ahead and taking my entire life and moving to Japan. The home of vapor. But that's great memories of that apartment. It's very, very, as we say in Japan, it's not tsukashi. It's nostalgic to think about the things that we did at that apartment.
I'll tell a little story. On the last day that I lived there, I got up early, which I never do. I never get up early. And I was waiting for my friend to come help me move. And I was like, okay, I want to get this guy a gift, you know? So I walked down the stairs and I walked over to John's Marketplace. Classic Vaporwave hub for us. A little corner store with the most exotic beer selection you've ever seen. And I walked into the crisp, air-conditioned John's Market. Ran into, I hadn't been there in a while. I thought all the employees that I knew had left. But I ran into one of the classic John's guys. He was like, what's up, dude? I was like, oh, fuck, what's up, dude? We talked. Yeah. Walked through the exotic beer aisles. I picked up that crazy British beer for my buddy, the one that tastes like those strawberry candies that your grandmother has usually.
Oh, yeah.
And I picked up a Doppelbock for myself, a beer which tastes like smoked sausage. It's delicious.
Oh, you picked up the Reich beer. Yeah.
So good. And then I took a little walk around the neighborhood, and I was really hit with a big wave of nostalgia. And I almost cried. It was horrible. But now that I've moved, I wouldn't want it any other way. Fuck that place.
Good. I don't know if this is a slime wire worthy material, but how are you liking the new place?
It's wonderful. It's wonderful. It's got hardwood floors. I've got brand new appliances. You can probably hear the brand new dryer in the background. Once it's done, it's gonna sing. Yeah, I got a washer and dryer, and they're brand new and they sing songs to you when they're finished. And they won't stop singing songs until you fuck with them. So I might have to step off and fuck with it to make it stop playing the jingle.
Yeah. Oh, that's nice. Is it bigger? Is it bigger than the old place?
It's probably about the same size, but there's a yard. My room is definitely slightly smaller. But the main thing that I was really excited about is that there's a window in the shower.
Overlooking the graveyard.
Overlooking the backyard. But you're getting all stuffy in the shower. You know, it's hard to breathe. You open up that window, get some nice, cool, fresh air in there. It's a beautiful, beautiful thing.
Yeah. I suppose one could leave a cigarette out on by the window and smoke and shower even.
Yeah, I'll have to talk about that to my roommate, but maybe. I'm not smoking inside this time, so maybe this might not work very well. But we're going to try.
We'll see how I could smoke inside my apartment right now, but I'm not going to do that.
Yeah, you choose not to.
Yeah.
Anyway, we've got some Vaporwave news that we should get out of the way. So
yeah, you're right.
This is very interesting. Speaking of when we lived in that apartment together, when we were first discovering Vaporwave was a much smaller scene than it is today. Like, way less artists. It didn't exist on Spotify at all. It wasn't even very represented in YouTube. It was really only on Bandcamp and maybe SoundCloud, but really not really. It was more of a Bandcamp experience. But last week, Spotify has created an official Vaporwave playlist, as well as an official Future Funk playlist.
Oh. Oh, dear.
Yeah, so this holds a lot of ramifications for the Vaporwave scene. My first, worry about this is that the playlist is just going to be complete bullshit, right? Like, it's just going to be a bunch of, music that isn't really Vaporwave, you know? Because that's sort of what a lot of the YouTube Vaporwave playlists are.
Mm.
But upon sort of looking at the playlist, I'm trying to pull it up here. it's pretty much all classic sample-based vaporwave. They've got Cat System Corp on there. They've got Topaz Gang. That's super old school. 18 Karat Affair. They've got A Face Without Eyes by Mesh. That's one of my favorite vaporwave tracks ever.
Oh, very, very nice. Very nice.
Yeah, back when I was managing a Papa Murphy's and forcing everybody at said Papa Murphy's to listen to vaporwave, every time I would close, I would play that song on full blast on a loop for the entire last hour of closing. It's one of the best vaporwave songs ever. I'll probably end this podcast with that song. And it has a really good, it's called Shanice Loves My Smile. It's a track by Vincent Remember and Telepath, which is off of an album called Interstellar Love, which was the fourth release ever on Dream Catalog. So they're really digging like pretty deep for some of these tracks. It has Toyo Hirakumen. I've showed you that album. That album's like super fucking tight.
Oh yeah. Sorry, I'm trying to find how do you find the official Vaporwave playlist?
Just looked up Vaporwave, and there's like a bunch of playlists that are called Vaporwave, so you have to go down a little bit, but you'll know which one it is because it has the little Spotify logo in the corner. And the front of it is just a Vaporwave. It's a bust of Caesar. With like
Caesar,
some grid pattern on the right hand side. It's got that classic blue purple turquoise sort of. Yeah.
Yep, found it.
It's pretty long too. It's 4 hours long.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of stuff on here that I have certainly never heard of, which is...
There's also a lot of stuff on there that you definitely have heard, you just don't remember, but I definitely played it for you. Like Incorporeal Visions Deluxe, that's some old school Dream Catalog shit. Infinity Frequencies, that's from like the Vaporwave Ultra Guide. It's pretty cool, Sabaris. But So what I wanted to talk about with this playlist specifically, I don't want to review it or anything, I don't really care, but Spotify has, like, in recent times, they've sort of deleted whole artists' discographies once they get hit with, like, copyright claims. That happened to Haircuts for Men, who used to have all their albums on Spotify, and now they're nowhere to be found on Spotify or Bandcamp. The same thing has happened to 18 Karat Affair. He had to take down a bunch of albums. So, on one hand, like, as a vaporwave artist, putting your music on Spotify, maybe getting your music onto this playlist is, like, good because more people will listen to it. It, as of now, has almost 3,000 likes, but also maybe that just puts your music enough in the forefront to where, like, it's more it's dangerous and people might copyright claim you.
That's true. It looks like from what I could see, a lot of it was pretty big art. I mean, like, there's definitely a lot of stuff that I don't know about, but there's also like you got your 2814 representation on there. You got your Death Dynamic Shrouds, your Nemeshes, which those guys seem like they're kind of bigger than, like, it seems less likely to me just because they're big that they're going to get gacked, you know?
I wonder how much, like, if they had any say on whether their music was being put on this playlist, because I know Mesh specifically is, like, for a long time been afraid of copyright claims. I know back in the day, his music got put on, like, this weird playlist that was played at Chipotle's across the nation, and because he released an album on cassette and then through this label, which wasn't really a vaporwave label, and somebody at that label contacted by some dude that was trying to create some sort of playlist of new interesting music for Chipotle, and he ended up giving him some Mesh tracks without Mesh's permission, and Mesh was kind of pissed off about it, and he was like, well, you know, what if the particular artist that I'm sampling happens to be in a Chipotle and hears that fucking song and then gets mad, you know? But I mean, Mesh is—he's on this playlist, so I don't know. Maybe his ideas have changed. I don't know.
Yeah, and I think all those copyright claims. Like, I don't think that since they're not necessarily. Well, I guess they're making a profit off of it because Spotify has to cut them in a small amount of percentage of everything that they do, right?
Like it's a ridiculously low amount, from what I understand from Spotify. It's like a third of a cent for each stream or something.
Yeah, but still they're cutting a profit by sampling uncleared samples and then putting them on Spotify. So that definitely does put them way more at risk than if they were to just keep on anonymously putting out shit on a non-monetized website, right?
Yeah, like Bandcamp.
Yeah,
but a lot of these artists have also done vinyl runs and stuff. But
that because the vinyl runs, the thing about the vinyl runs is that it's always some other, like, a vaporwave artist will make the the album, right? But like there's always it's some other like pressing company that handles the creation of those vinyls, right? So it's not like they're
They're distributed by a label. The vinyls are created by a separate company, like literally pressed onto, like the music is pressed onto the vinyl, right? By some sort of distribution company. And then the label distributes those vinyls for, you know, profit so they can pay the distribution company and then the artist and then make some profit themselves.
Gotcha, gotcha. So people are already profiting off of Vaporwave, off of uncleared samples. So like this probably isn't, I mean, they're just as likely to get doxxed here as they are in any other setting. Probably, right?
Yeah, here, hold on. My dryer is singing at me.
I hear the song. Yes, I do hear the song.
Yeah, yeah. So just talk for a second. It's a beautiful song.
It's a cute song. I approve of it. It reminds me of the various electronic machines that I have in my apartment that also sing songs.
I imagine that's a big thing in Japan, yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Everything sings a song. My Wi-Fi router sings a song. My toaster sings a song. My toaster really does actually sing a song.
That's but, amazing, the toaster? Yeah. Wait, it doesn't or it does?
It does. When it's done, it goes, dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee.
That's fucking awesome, dude.
Yeah, dude, it's lit. yeah, so I get to hear that every morning. It's kind of wearing thin on me at this point. But yeah. I wasn't worrying too much about this Vaporwave podcast and the legal ramifications that it has.
Well, I'm not worried about us.
I mean the playlist, the Spotify playlist. Yeah. I think that they probably are gonna get doxxed or whatever you call it if they like it's gonna happen either way if it does happen, so
yeah, if they make enough money. What do you think about the Vaporwave implications of the idea of there being a Spotify official Vaporwave playlist? It's not very Vaporwave to me.
It certainly does not ring very Vaporwave to me either. Definitely
it's a massive corporation creating a product out of Vaporwave, which is supposed to be against massive corporations.
Yeah, it's definitely not very Vaporwave. I mean, like, Spotify is the, like, answer to what, I mean, like, not what Vaporwave is directly a part of, but, like, the whole concept of, like, free internet, of the internet just totally undermining record companies' abilities to turn a profit. Spotify is the answer to that. It's, like, it's how all record companies make money now. So it is sort of.
What was that shit the Spotify CEO said like last week that like pissed a bunch of people off? Do you know about that?
No, I have no idea.
He did like some, the CEO of Spotify did some sort of interview. And what did he say? He said something like artists now, they need to make music faster or something. He was like, nobody wants to wait like 3 years for an album anymore. Here we go. Comments from Spotify CEO anger some musicians.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna, it wants me to listen to a thing about it on NPR, but I'm not gonna do that.
I think what he's saying is what the CEO is saying is, well, you can't expect to take 3 or 4 years to write and record and release an album and be famous. That's just not how it works anymore. You gotta come up with the hits. You gotta have a hit every 6 months, and people are pissed off because, like, you know, that's
basically what he said.
Insult to art, an insult to the craft of musicianship, further being commodified and corporatized. And that's like exactly what a fucking Spotify CEO would say, you know. I think the concept of a Vaporwave Spotify playlist definitely is another nail in the coffin of the slow death of Vaporwave and why we need Vaporwave even more today.
But Vaporwave is like a music genre that is important because it's incredibly prolific. So in a way, what he's saying is kind of right. Like most Vaporwave artists don't take 3 years to make an album, unless you're Mesh. Mesh takes forever to make an album. But and he was particularly pissed off about what the Spotify CEO said, or like said some remark about it on Twitter. So Vaporwave artists, they're known for releasing like an album a month under like different aliases and like being really prolific.
Oh, of course.
Because Vaporwave isn't supposed to be a thing that takes forever to make, you know.
Yeah, it's mass-produced. We all know that. I don't know. I think that the, like, more than just whatever that guy said, the fact that there's an official Vaporwave Spotify playlist is kind of like it's 10 years too late. And it just shows that it's insane that they took this long to make it. It is kind of confusing because it's like, why did they make this playlist? I would imagine that they would have made a playlist that's like, okay, let's get all the bangers like St. Pepsi and like IQ84. People probably remember IQ84, right? Let's put it on the playlist for like, you know, normies to listen to. But it seems like this playlist is like made by somebody who, somebody who knows the genre quite well. So I just wonder like who this is for, why this is here, why now?
Yeah, the description for it is ride the vaporwave and lose your soul in the aesthetic.
Yeah.
That's pretty goddamn lame.
Yeah, but hey, what do you expect?
Yeah, what do you expect?
I mean, I think I'll probably put this on my rotation for like studying music and just see what it is and see what kind of stuff they got put on there.
There's some good tracks. I listen to it at work, yeah.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I like that Ultra Funk Fantasy. That's a good one.
Wait, which one's that Ultra Funk Fantasy?
Vape Air. Remember the Vape Air?
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's from his album like After Manipool, yeah.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Yeah. And of course they got the old Death Dynamic Shroud on there, so I can't really blame them. I can't hate on it.
I wonder if it was just some dude that works for Spotify that is into Vaporwave that was like, yo, let me make this playlist for you guys.
Yeah, I'll just whip it right up.
It would have been cooler if somebody made an album and called it Official Spotify Vaporwave Playlist.
Absolutely. And put the logo on there?
Yeah, yeah, that would have been genius.
Direct copyright violation?
That would have been the shit.
Yeah, that would have been great.
Yeah, I don't have much else about it. I do have one other piece of Vaporwave news, unless you have anything else.
Go for it.
Well, today, Luxury Elite returned to the Vaporwave scene. Luxury Elite is an old-school Vaporwave artist that has been very removed. But she did a set for Private Suites live stream, and apparently has some new music in the works. So that's pretty cool. Luxury Elite is, like, really dope.
Were they more of like an ambient vaporwave?
No. Luxury Elite is very early vaporwave, like just completely sample based. A lot of stuff to do with like American consumer culture, basically.
Yeah, you know,
it's smooth jazz samples, 80s funk samples, slowed down. Nothing else besides sample manipulation. Very, very cool stuff. Sort of like an earlier St. Pepsi, like before St. Pepsi was doing future funk. His music was a lot like what Luxury Elite stuff is. I think they had a split. They actually they did a split called Late Night Delight, which has the song by St. Pepsi, which has the Moon Man video on it, you know, which sampled Michael Jackson's song.
That was a split.
Yeah, that was a split album from St. Pepsi and Luxury Elite.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, very, very cool. Big. But yeah, she did a DJ set live stream for Private Suite. But I have some beef with Private Suite because Private Suite's cool. I don't have like real beef with them, but they do have a Vaporwave podcast. And one of the things that they do is they allow people to call into this number and leave a message, and they'll play those messages on the show. In the spirit of good competition, called up and I left a message and I said, hey, in the spirit of good competition, would you shout out my brand new Vaporwave podcast, Slimewire Podcast? And they didn't fucking play it on the show. So it's all out fucking war. Fuck Private Suite. They also have a hand in the Vaporwave documentary.
Dude, fuck Private Suite.
Yeah.
Fucking corporatist shills. Yeah, yeah. Those scumbags. We're coming for you, Private Suite. You just watch out.
Their podcast sucks. They interview some really good artists, and they do like these long form interview series. They did one with Nano Shrine. They did one with 3D Blast. Like that shit's cool. The other podcast that they do, it's just dudes talking about fucking vaporwave food, like Arizona iced tea. Fucking stupid. Fuck them. They don't know. They don't talk about the real shit like we do.
Yeah, you're right.
Vaporwave food. Yeah, fuck that. They're a nonprofit. That is cool. They have a magazine. Whatever. That's cool. They made the first vaporwave magazine. Congratulations, Private Suite. But fuck off. There's a new podcast in the game.
Yeah, dude, it's time to let sleeping dogs lie. Let the new meat come in.
Yeah, so I just wanted to get that out.
Absolutely, yeah. No, I couldn't agree more.
Yeah.
Yeah, Slimewire is taking over the world, baby. There's make room for number one.
We're the only people talking about the real shit. Speaking of real shit.
Yeah, exactly. We're talking about...
Yeah. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I just had more beef disses and things like that. But
give me more beef. Give me more disses. That.
No, I was riffing, and you got me off my riff. So I think we should move on.
All right, let's move on. Let's take a step out of the vaporwave sphere and let's step into this dystopian hell world that we live in, where at least one
present.
Yeah, we call it present. At least one good thing has happened, and that's that Jordan Peterson has COVID-19.
That's what you get for eating an all you meat diet.
That's what you get for going to a hospital in Serbia.
Yeah, no. His health, like, his whole health history is, his private life is in, like, direct contradiction to his public, like, persona, because he, you know, is constantly talking about, like, how you gotta get your shit together, man. You gotta fucking, like,
there are a lot of vaporwave nerds that eat the shit up. Vaporwave nerds, they're stuck at home on their computers. They're fucking losers. Yep. We're not losers. We're cool. But there are other vaporwave nerds that, yeah, they just eat this Jordan Peterson shit up. It's fucking crazy.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's, I think the primary audience is people that don't really fucking know what he's talking about at all. So they, like, start watching Jordan Peterson, and he's a showman, right? He really has a great talent for getting people whipped up and getting people, like, worked up into a frenzy, and also for sounding like he's, like, the smartest guy in the entire world. Super smart. And then, like, and so his whole, like, creed is about taking responsibility for your life and fixing your own problems, and you gotta, like, fight the dragon inside of yourself, blah, blah, blah. And this guy's been, like, addicted to strange, like, last resort.
Anxiety medication.
Yeah, yeah. He's been addicted to anti-anxiety medication for, like, years and years and years. He's been on an all-meat diet. And, like, and then he fucking had a giant mental breakdown because he's not eating right and he has too many painkillers in his body. So he has to, like, leave his professional life, letting millions of people down in the process, directly affecting the lives of people, go into, like, a rehab facility. And,
yeah,
like, it's, I don't know. And I mean, I think, like, the amount of, like, airtime that Jordan Peterson's getting has decreased exponentially since he had to be admitted into a psychiatric hospital, because that just kind of puts the lie to, like, his whole philosophy.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but everything for him started falling apart, I think, right after he had that debate with Slavoj Žižek.
That is absolutely true. That is really true. The debate with Slavoj Žižek.
Do you, like, think he broke his mind? Like,
yeah. Well, I mean, I think the other thing is that his wife got cancer. His wife is battling cancer, which is, you know, absolutely unfortunate and sad.
Yeah, it's really not something. Sad. It's not something that you can pull your bootstraps up
yeah, about. Well. Well, Jordan Peterson has directly said before, I remember one of my friends back home who later got addicted to crystal meth and tried to axe this guy's door down to get some crystal meth and then went to jail. She was really into Jordan Peterson. Surprise, surprise.
Is this the one that dressed up as the red pill for Halloween?
Yes, yes, yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah, Kate. So she just went totally insane and axed down this guy's door to get crystal meth. And then the cops surrounded the property and she went to jail. She's out now. She's, like, living a happier life, I think. I don't know. But she would post a lot of, like, back when she was, like, definitely on crystal meth and everybody was like, damn, she's on crystal meth. I didn't really, like, think much of it, but she would post things with, like, letters in all caps, like, you gotta listen to Jordan Peterson, he's gonna renovate your life. You gotta learn, kids, about how to defeat the dragon that's inside your body. You gotta defeat it. And there was one video that she posted that was, like, literally Jordan Peterson talking about, like, if you work on yourself really hard, then you can become the kind of person that everybody gathers around as an anchor of support at a funeral. And that will be, like, a really great thing that you do for the world.
That is everybody such can a, like, you. Creepy, narcissistic yeah, way to look shit. At, like, self-help.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Yeah. You become the guy that, like, when your grandma dies, everybody is like, oh, he's so strong. He's so awesome. Like, dude, that guy's great.
Yeah, like, if you watch, like, if you watch all these videos of Jordan Peterson owning SJWs, then you will become the smartest person that you've ever known. Dude. And the best, smartest, most goodest person in the world, in your entire world, you know.
Yes. That's you're gonna become so smart at being good, at being morally good. Like, you're going to be better than everybody at being morally virtuous. But yeah, so like he was talking out of his ass about that the whole time. And then now his wife got cancer and it made him go totally crazy and go into a mental institution. So he In Serbia, yes. Yeah. So he did not walk the walk on his like whole, on the talk he was talking. So yeah.
I hope he gets better. I want to see, I want him to try and like crawl himself out of this hole. I want him to try and somehow justify everything that happened to him, you know?
I mean, it's either he's going to have to just accept that he's out of the public limelight forever, stop writing books, and live a life of anonymity as a Canadian professional psychologist forever. Or he's going to have to be like, I have returned. I have dominated my addiction. I'm stronger than ever. Meat and fucking Percocets couldn't kill me. I'm back. I will fucking skull fuck Joe Rogan live on his podcast. And like, yeah, he's going to have to come back like twice as hard in order for anybody to take him seriously ever again. Joe Rogan, which is something I would absolutely love to see.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I don't expect. I think that like most people have really just totally disavowed him. Like you don't hear anything about Jordan Peterson anymore. I think there's also like the moment where Jordan Peterson, when it seemed like the cultural debate in the United States and globally was about like, how are we gonna, like, should we deliver, should the government take an active role in promoting justice and equality amongst minorities and women? Or should we have a more laissez-faire, like, American Western style approach to self-governing. So it was like kind of happier times when you could debate about whether, you know, Marxism or classical liberalism was the way to go. Whereas now we're like, you know, the debate is like, who should we sacrifice in order to keep the economy running? Should old people die off, or should the jobs of young people like be sacrificed to keep old people alive? And I think that Jordan Peterson just doesn't have a real, like, I feel like, how could he come back now and be like, yeah, you know, it's tough, but you got to get real tough about the coronavirus. You got to just like look yourself in the mirror and say, you're
especially
gonna
after
do it.
Having it,
you got to eat nothing but red meat.
Yeah.
After getting the coronavirus. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. Like,
I guess I would be interested to hear. Go ahead.
Or you'd be interested to hear what?
Okay. Oh, I'd be interested to hear his. Yeah. Go ahead.
Well, the thing that, so like, obviously, like Republicans and like conservative like ideologues, like they're doing sort of one of two things right now, which is they're either like going crazy about like Black Lives Matter protests and calling, you know, talking about how Antifa are terrorists and, you know, basically, you know, they're retracting everything that they ever said about, like, don't tread on me and about personal right and personal liberties. And they're saying, no, actually, you need to respect the cops and you need to do everything that they tell you to do no matter what. And then they're also at the same time being like, oh, but I'm not going to wear a fucking mask because they're telling me that I need to wear a mask. And it's my personal right and personal liberty to not wear a mask. And so, there's this weird, like, sort of amnesia with these people. And, like, so my dad, who's, like, a classic, like, Republican, is, of course, pissed off about, like, Antifa and Black Lives Matter. But he recently had a heart attack, and he's 72, and he's super susceptible to getting coronavirus. So he's also pissed off at these people that aren't wearing masks. And so, so Jordan Peterson having gotten COVID, like, you would think that he would be really serious about preventing other people from getting COVID, and it just definitely illustrates that these people these aren't real convictions that these people have. It's just sort of a culture war of going against whatever their young kids are telling them, you know.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah,
no matter what it is.
It's always just sort of like I forget the word. Contrarian. They're contrarians.
Yeah. That's what. Yeah, they're reactionary and they're contrarian. Yeah. So you can't have your cake and eat it too. You know.
Yeah, I don't know how somebody who preaches like personal self-reliance and like not not giving a shit about anybody else, basically, could possibly respond to a pandemic where, like, your actions directly affect the actions of everybody else, and somebody else exercising their freedom to not wear a mask impinges on your freedom to not, you know, get the coronavirus and die.
Yeah, to not die, yeah. Especially if you're old, and especially if you're a freak like Jordan Peterson, who eats all red meat and is addicted to anxiety pills and is in a fucking, a funny farm in Serbia.
Yeah, I'm surprised that there's a lot of COVID. I mean, I feel like in the Middle East, the cases haven't increased that much. So my other question is, like, was Jordan Peterson, like, what was he doing to get coronavirus?
Oh, you know, like, Russia is lying about the amount of cases that they have.
Okay, fair. You're right.
Like, what other country, like, they're the most likely country to lie about that shit.
Yeah, that's true.
I do follow some Russian vaporwave producers on Instagram and shit, and from what I can see, there's no social distancing happening over there. They're all just partying.
Yeah.
From the outside,
it sounds like Russia.
Yeah. I wish I was there, man.
Yeah. Yeah, it's much the same in Japan.
Yeah. That sounds
good. What are you going to do? It's pretty lit.
Fucking, did you watch that Trump interview?
So I watched the first half of it.
I didn't watch the whole thing. I just saw some clips, but yeah.
Yeah. First I saw those clips, and then I saw, like, half of the entire interview. And, it was, it was just embarrassing. Like, I feel like they fucking – so did you – I don't know if they showed it in the whatever, like, clip collection that you watched. But if you watch, like, the first thing that happens in that interview is that they sit down, and then, like, a beautiful blonde woman walks – through the back of the screen, and Donald Trump just, like, stares at her the whole time as she's walking, and, like, stares distractedly at her, and then he's like, oh, okay, hey, hello, how's it going, and starts the interview.
I think he probably thought that was cool.
I feel like they fucking, like, At first I thought, like, oh, this is, like, a power play by him. He's basically signaling that he's a dominant,
he's trying to make that other guy feel like a virgin.
Like a virgin cuck. Yeah.
Because I don't think Trump is...
Like, seriously, like, it's a blonde woman in, like, a... Go ahead.
But Trump is old and his body is so shitty. I don't think he has real sexual urges. I don't think his...
No.
There's no way his dick works. Like...
No.
He doesn't, like... Yeah, that's not really exciting him. I think it's just a play. Like, he's just trying to show off. And it's sort of like a middle schooler showing off. Like, yo, that chick is so hot when none of your friends are talking about hot chicks to show that you're, like, more mature or whatever. He hasn't really grown past that level of reasoning since middle school.
Yeah.
So he still thinks that by being like, hey, that chick's hot, that makes him seem like way cooler than this you know, British dude who's like a virgin cuck to him, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I like the way he did it, like, I don't think he was really thinking about it. I also think that, like, probably when you're a billionaire and, like, your daddy buys you a, like, expensive, like, Taiwanese concubine to, like, lose your virginity to when you're 13 years old on your birthday, like, you don't think about just staring at women. You just do it because that's what you do. Nobody ever told you, hey, stop staring. Stop. It's very rude to stare sexually at a woman across the room. Nobody told you not to do it.
Especially when you're the president and you're in an extremely, like, professional space and, yeah.
Yeah. You're about to be interviewed on an interview that will go across the country and will be viewed by millions and millions of people.
An interview that is specifically meant to delegitimize you as a person and make you look stupid.
Like a fucking clown.
Yeah.
And then, like, from that point, I was like, oh my God, this is going to be a fucking disaster. This is just a nightmare. And from, the rest, it was just a joke, clownish buffoon, like, talking to a guy who's probably spent, like, 12 years in, like, a journalism school in Cambridge.
Or who's the British guy? Who's the British guy that has the late show?
Oliver? Yeah, John Oliver's.
John Oliver's more successful.
Yeah. Who his parents love more. And, there were just parts where, like, did you see the part where he's,
Were you trading back the papers?
Yeah, he's fucking trying to show him all these papers, and he's just, like, handing him, like, fucking paper. He's just, like, making a mess with all these papers, like, throwing them in the air and being like, oh, look at this one over here in the papers.
Oh, every time the guy...
just take a look at those.
Every time the guy asks him a question, he, like, looks up from the paper, like, startled, and his eyes are, like, wide as fuck. He looks like a kid that, like, got in trouble.
Yeah. That's, like, a classic tactic that, like, anybody uses when they're in an uncomfortable situation. Like, they try to, like, be like, oh, I'm really interested in this, like, little like cigarette tray that I have in my hand here. Oh, what, you were saying something? Oh, sorry, I wasn't paying attention. I was busy, you know? Like, and that's exactly what he was doing. He's like, oh, sorry, I'm like, I was just thinking about something else. What were we talking about?
Yeah, my favorite part is when he's like talking about, he was like, you can't test very much. You sometimes you don't want to test very much. And the guy's just like, what are you talking about? And he's like, read the books, read the manuals. And the guy's like, what books? Like, what are you talking about?
What manual? Yeah.
There's some sort of coronavirus manual. I think in that same interview, he said that he was like, well, when I got into office, we didn't even have a test for this disease.
And
it didn't exist. It's totally
The coronavirus didn't exist.
But everybody's talked about it. But I was trying to think of, like, is there ever been, like, in a dystopian, like, piece of fiction, has there ever been a leader that's just, like, a buffoon? Besides, like, a parody, like Spaceballs or something? But, like, I can't fucking think of anything.
Has there ever been a leader that was, like, a serious piece of science fiction where the leader was just a clownish moron?
Yeah, but that's, like, part of the story.
There was a book by a, like, he's, like, the OG, like, postmodern author of the United States from, like, the 70s and 80s, named William Gaddis, and he has a book called, he's famous for a book called The Recognitions, but that book is, like, that's, like, if you want to, like, whip out your dick about what books you've read, and you don't want to be, like, the plebe who who's, like, yeah, I've read David Foster Wallace's book, that's the book that you talk. It's like 1,000 pages long. But he also wrote a book that is called Junior. And it's about like this young dude who is a total douchebag and becomes a business mogul and later the president of the United States. And he burns out. And it's totally about like just a complete fucking narcissist who can't see how the world works. Like, he's so obsessed with himself, he just doesn't understand the basic functioning of the world. And it gets him really far because you can just, like, you can succeed in the business world because of that. And then later, it's all about, like, since it's from the perspective of Junior, like,
his name is Junior?
I can't remember what his name is, but...
But it's called Junior.
Yeah, the book is called Junior. And he, like... Since it's from his perspective, you don't realize, like, why he's failing as the president and leading the country into a total shit show. Because, from his perspective, he's doing, like, a great job and he's, like, a total badass. But, like, you can kind of piece together these clues of, like, why he fucked up the entire country. But you're never actually told why. So Junior would be kind of... Junior is definitely a prescient book that people should totally read. That was written way before any of this shit ever happened, that does feature a clownish buffoon becoming president and destroying the fabric of America.
Yeah. Pretty sad.
Junior. It's not looking good. Things aren't looking up. But hey, like, I'm in Japan. I might be staying here for an indefinite amount of time.
Yeah, just stay there, man. Just stay the fuck there. My buddy in Antarctica is coming back in, I guess, this month. I was like, why the fuck are you coming back, dude? He had the option to renew his contract, but he wants to get out of Antarctica. I guess it might be pretty depressing to be in Antarctica right now, knowing that your family might die, but,
yeah. Yeah, I mean, honestly, it's kind of the same out here, you know? Like, there's...
Well, your family is rich. They can self-isolate as much as they want.
Yeah. They're not having... I mean... They're having like the effects of like severe isolation and like depression and being old, you know. My dog died like a week ago. My family dog died.
Oh, damn.
Yes, yeah, real rough, dude. Yeah, it's shitty. But like we all knew that she was gonna die. I knew that she would die while I was out here. Like, it would have shocked me if I had come home and she was still alive. But, like, my parents are, like, fucking, like, totally... So it doesn't infect me as much, but it affects them a lot more. And, like, they're, like, you know, my grandpa is, like, circling the drain. My parents, like, are... You maybe have, like, a different experience with this because you, your dad was a little bit older than mine when he had you. But, like, I look at my parents now, and they're fucking, like, they're old people now. They're old. They're geriatric. They're not, like, old young people. They're, like, fucking, like, they're old people.
Yeah.
So they're crossing that threshold. They're watching their parents just wither away, and their dog died, and they can't leave their house. And like hundreds of thousands of people are just dying like flies in the country. So like, yeah, they're having a real rough time. I'm just out here ditzing around in Japan. We're up to like 63 cases in my prefecture, and everybody's freaking out. That's like 63 fucking cases.
Yeah, that's nothing. Nothing.
So yeah,
in America, like 1,000 people are dying a day. They call it 9/11 every day. It's every day is 9/11.
Yeah. It's been like how much? About twice as many people that died in the Vietnam War, I think.
Jesus fuck.
Yeah, in 5 months. So, yeah.
I have heard of people being like, "What are we gonna do for like Halloween this year? Or what are we gonna do for Christmas? How are we gonna tell kids what Santa's doing this year?" It's like, we're not having Christmas. Like, Christmas is off the table. Halloween is 100% off the table.
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah, oh yeah, Halloween is not, like, I don't know what the fuck you're thinking is going to go down at Halloween. Like, okay, everybody has to put up, like, a plexiglass screen door.
Yeah, let's have all our kids dip their greasy fingers into one bowl of candy, like, that every other kid on the street has touched.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous. That's like how a bunch of people in Congress got
COVID. Make sure you get...
A bunch of people in Congress got COVID because they have a shared bowl of jelly beans. They all reach into and grab.
That's the most fucking boomer shit I've heard in my entire life. Getting fucking COVID from your jelly bean bowl.
And not thinking anything of it. Being like, well, yeah, there's this big pandemic and we should be washing our hands, but I really want a jelly bean right now. You know, my blood sugar's low. I feel like I'm going to fall over if I don't eat a jelly bean.
Yeah, dude, McConnell's got to have his jelly beans or he just can't function. Like, man's a beast when it comes to the jelly beans.
Oh, man, I can put down many jelly beans.
Yeah, we got to re-up that bowl by noon when McConnell is working. I read it. Did you, like, I think that the LA Times has been basically just, like, full-on trying to incite a new civil war in their editorial section because they're constantly posting these, like, fucking, like, inflammatory op-eds, like, letters to the editor. Like, last week it was, like, a guy that was like, well, I think Donald Trump is doing a great job. He kept all of his promises, so I'll vote for him again. So which I promises? Think he's going to be looking forward to a great 2021. Which yeah, promises? I know. And so it just triggered
the
like
border a wall? And
he didn't specify. Yeah. I think it was like a strong economy and like, you know.
Man, our economy is like going so strong.
Ostracizing
right now.
SJWs on Twitter. Dude, economy's lit. Things are looking up.
We never needed those businesses, you know.
So they
we don't need
that.
The businesses to be open.
Businesses? No, we don't need businesses. We don't need commerce. Yeah. We don't need employment.
Go ahead, though. Go ahead. Right. Sorry.
So this last article triggered a cavalcade of responses from outraged like people being like, "Well, he didn't actually fulfill the thing." That was like, "Hey guys, remember that op-ed that we shared with you all? Turns out you guys really didn't like it. Crazy, right? Like, here's a bunch of like counter responses that you all posted. We totally weren't expecting all of the readers of the LA Times to just hate on this guy for supporting Trump." And then there was another one that came up on my feed yesterday that was like some fucking boomer being like, "Well, I remember like the Greatest Generation, they went to war, they fought and died for their families during World War II. And now the younger generation, they're going out and partying during COVID. They're spreading it to all us old folks. I'm so disappointed in all of the millennials. They're not like the Greatest Generation. They're just selfish and ignorant." And like, so at first, you know, I was outraged and totally incensed at this fucking idiot guy. But then I was like, I'm pretty sure the LA Times posted that because they were like, this is going to be spicy. Like, people are going to be really pissed off at this guy. So, yeah.
Well, if civil war is between boomers and millennials, I'm all for it. Let's rear up that war. Let's absolutely bang those drums. Let's get these boomers out of here, bro.
Oh, there's no chance that boomers could stand up to any millennial, like any single millennial. Just like the psychological like readiness that I have to die for even a meaningless cause. like I'd throw that shit, like I would throw it all in. I would go all in. Like a boomer, like what? Like they fucking are watching HGTV.
Like, yeah, they're going to talk about civil war, but then their plan is to go sit at home and watch it on the news. They don't have any plans to... and interact with it.
Exactly. Their idea is that they're going to write a really influential op-ed that will, like, steer the course of the debate. But yeah, boomers got shit to live for. They got retirements to look forward to. They have houses that they've paid their mortgages for. Like I don't got none of that shit, you know? Yeah,
they need to go to vacation next year. All of their vacations got delayed. They need to go on a cruise. My dad was even talking, he's like, I can't wait till I can get on that cruise next year. It's like, oh my God, shut up. You're 72. You might die of coronavirus. The last thing you should be talking about is a fucking cruise.
Just getting on an international cruise, going to Mexico. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's like, no, like what do I got? Like my next shift? And like getting drunk, you know, like that's what I got, you know.
We got the podcast, baby. That's what we got.
We do got the podcast, absolutely. But I mean, the average millennial doesn't have much to look forward to. So, yeah, I think it would be a clear, easy victory.
Yeah, I think that's a good place to break is with inciting civil war and saying fuck boomers, we want to take y'all out.
Yeah, inciting intergenerational conflict. Let's move on to the culture portion.
Slime water. Choose your own adventure.
And we're back.
We're back, baby. This is the culture aspect of SlimeWire episode 2819. We're back, baby. So we have some albums to review for you. We have the George Clanton / Nick Hexum collaborative album. We also have a new little EP album single thing. I don't know what it is from HKE, as well as his new track under the Hong Kong Express moniker on a compilation put out by Pure Life Tapes. What do you want to get in first? I enjoy giving you this this choice in the podcast.
Oh, yeah. I would like to go ahead and dive in on that George Clanton, Nick Hexum LP.
Which is called George Clanton and Nick Hexum.
Yes, appropriately. Features some thick dog ladies holding a bomb.
I did really like the furry sort of cover art. So for a little bit of background, George Clanton... for like a long time, like since he's been doing interviews and stuff, has always worn like a 311 shirt in all his interviews and has always said that he's a fan of the band 311, which is like a 90s like pop punk ska white dude rapping band, which is over the years not been looked at very favorably.
yeah.
But George Clanton seems to really like this band, and he managed to get the frontman Nick Hexum to collaborate on this album with him. It's pretty interesting concept for like a vaporwave artist to do. I don't even know if you would call George Clanton a vaporwave artist at the moment, which is something I wanted to get into while we talk about this. But I don't know. What did you think about the album in general?
So I listened to it in my usual listening regimen. I would listen to it on the train, and then I listened to it one more time while I was home studying. And
also, I listened to it at work a bunch of times, like several times, because it's like really good background music to play at work. But then I sort of listened to it and paid more attention to it on a train ride and also by myself, you know, smoking outside. And,
Sure. Yeah, so I like the general like aesthetic that he's going for on the album of like this kind of like... like Alanis Morissette style 90s throwback.
Very late 90s, yeah. It's sort of like there's a lot of like shoegaze elements to it, which is present in a lot of George Clanton's music in general. But this album is like really like vibey and really sort of chill. I don't know, it's sort of hard to have an opinion about it.
Yeah, so that was my thing. It's like I remember that song off of his, off of Slide. It's like the single off of Slide has the same vibe to it, and I really liked that one single. One song of that is like good, but this to me is basically a whole album that is like the same vibe over and over again.
I would say is like I think Slide did a lot better in like Slide is definitely like a vibe heavy album. The whole album is like the same sort of shit, but I actually like Slide a lot. I think it's like really cool when you listen to it all the way through. This one is a, like, I just thought it was like pretty, very background music. I don't know. I didn't.
It wasn't
super exciting. There were some good tracks, but yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So it's like, I felt like there were some tracks that did the thing that they want to do on every track better, you know? Like, there were some songs that were like, oh, yes, this is a really good laid-back California vibe-in shoegazy song with, like, white people version of hip-hop drums and, like, actual and, like, live instrumentation up front. Like, there were some songs that were good at that, but that were better than the others, but since every single one was going for that same vibe, yeah. Sorry, it's going to be a no for me, dog. I was not, like, like, I found myself just being like, are you serious? Like, you can't keep on going for the same thing for every single song.
Necessarily. And,
like, especially.
I wouldn't say it's like white people appropriating hip hop, which, I mean, it definitely is that, and 311 definitely was that in the 90s, but I feel like a lot of, like, 90s pop acts were sort of doing that, and what George Clang is really going for here is, like, a nostalgic throwback to that time of, like, really radio-friendly pop rap music. But even on this album, he doesn't really rap much on this album, and the one song that that you could say that he's really rapping is actually, like, my favorite track off the whole thing. So I don't know if that's,
which,
like,
one was it?
Crash Pad. That's one I put on the playlist for you, like, the last time.
Yeah, that was the standout track for me, just because it was I like the concept. Like, that one specifically, I feel like the breezy instrumentation and the kind of, like, laid back, like, I'm just like a 20-something trying to figure out my life type vibe that they were going for.
It's funny because the guy that's singing the song is Nick Exum, who is, like, well in his, like, 40s by at this point.
Yeah.
Like, maybe he was young in the 90s, but no, he's not like that anymore. No. But that song is, like, really, everybody has, like, everybody knows or had a crash
what
pad.
They're talking about. Yeah, exactly.
It's a song about it's a song about the place that it's a song about the one place that your friends all went that was, like, a safe spot where you could get high and get drunk and, like, just chill. And
chill.
There's not a lot of pop music that, like, really romanticizes that sort of idea of, like, being, like, a young teenage piece of shit and having this one specific spot that you can go to.
It's a specific type of teenage romanticism that is, like, not, you know, most people want to think about their teenage lives as being, or the perfect sort of idyllic teenage life as being a middle-class existence where you can go party and get drunk and stuff. But, like, crash pad dudes, like, those are people that are on the outs, you know? They're not getting internships or anything. I really like that.
It's just the dude that was, like,
just for the...
The crash pad is the place. It's like, you know, like, you're a teenager and you know a guy that's, like, older than you that already graduated, but he works at Fred Meyer and he has, like, an apartment and you can go there and he doesn't care that you're, like, smoking weed, you know?
Yeah. And maybe your friends that are doing a little bit worse off than you can crash there.
I was crashing at the crash pad, buddy. I was on the floor, just like they're talking about,
Mm-hmm.
What's the living on the floor? There was always room for more. There's some great lyrics on that song. Yeah.
I also liked the, I just liked the lyrics of Under Your Window. That whole, like, he threw a rock. He probably should have thrown a pebble, but he's still not running away. He's still not running away because he broke the window, but he just is willing to deal with the consequences of getting your attention and being your boo. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, this whole thing is just teenage nostalgia, like, jacking off about being a teenager. It's kind of
cute. I wish, it just seems like it's really just creatively, like...
You still there? Hold up, my shit just fucked up. Are you still there?
Whoa. And we're back.
So, here, hold up, we're still recording, so maybe it still has that shit. But for the sake of maybe it deleted it, let's start again.
The whole culture section?
Well, yeah, we can just talk. Maybe it still has it, but I don't know. Well, it still says it's recording, so I think it still has it. So let's just go on. Well, basically all we were saying was that this George Clanton, Nick Hexum tape is not very exciting or any it's or good. It's super repetitive. It's like literally just like one vibe.
Yeah, it's one vibe the whole way through. It's something that I feel like I could have heard in like 2011, 2012.
Definitely. You know? A lot of what George Clanton, like I really like the album Slide, but a lot of what he's doing like lately is like, yeah, just sort of it's basically chill wave. Like, I don't think it's vaporwave at this point at all. Like, he's using all original like synth patterns and shit. George Clanton was a chill wave producer before he was a vaporwave producer. I actually have this interview with him pulled up because I don't know. I sort of want to talk about George Clanton and like his place in the vaporwave scene, because what he says in this label is, he says, this is a direct quote. If it's an interview from Vice, but he says, if I use the tag vaporwave, then I have an automatic audience and a certain number of people will be like, this is kind of like vaporwave, but it's even better. That happens all the time, so I keep doing it.
Yeah.
And, like, I like George Clanton's music, but that really, like, sort of turns me off from the whole
thing. That would be the wrong way.
Yeah. Because it's like you're appropriating. It's not like he's appropriating vaporwave, because he was, like, an OG vaporwave dude that was doing shows on, like, SPF 420. He has, like, loads of old classic vaporwave albums, but he also famously, like, completely disavowed vaporwave like a while ago, and every time somebody would compare him to vaporwave, he would get sort of pissed off. And now he's come back, and in this interview, he says it's because he knows he can get an audience if he tags it as vaporwave, and that he thinks his music is like vaporwave but better.
But better.
Which that really sort of angers me. Like, I don't like that at all, because like, okay, whatever. Like, you're writing your own songs and recording your own instruments. That doesn't mean your music is better than sampling a Michael Jackson song. Just because you're putting more into it, that doesn't mean that it's like a more important musical statement than stealing a Michael Jackson song, which in my opinion is like a much bigger like musical artistic like leap than just like creating music that you should have already heard in the 90s. Like, why are you trying to, like, there's a lot of like vaporwave artists now that like are doing original music that are just trying to sound like 80s artists, and it's like, I don't understand the point of that at all. Like, why would you, if you're making original music, why do you want to make it sound like the 80s? Why wouldn't you want to make it sound like something new? But if you're sampling, then that like gives you the way to make your music sound like it's new.
I think that that's definitely a very good point of like if you're trying to authentically create the real thing of like 80s music, that's totally played out. Like, that's completely, like, why are you even bothering to do that?
There are so many lame indie rock acts that have been doing that for, like, 10 years.
Dude, yeah, like, MGMT's been doing that. Like, that shit has been, like, that was, that whole type of, like, indie music was, like, when I really started getting into music in general. Like, I really loved all that shit, so I started listening to it in 2008.
Yeah.
So, like, why do you think that now, I have this great idea, I'm gonna recreate all of our like childhood memories. Like, do you guys remember how awesome this music was and how good it was?
Well, this it's not like I have a problem with MGMT. Like, I like them, like MGMT, like I like their music, but I also understand that like when I was into MGMT, that was cool, and then eventually I like stopped like being into it, and then vaporwave happened, and I was like, whoa, this is like a whole new way of looking at this shit. And this is way cooler than what MGMT was doing, even though MGMT is good. So I don't understand why you would be a part of this. You're just like going backwards in time. Why would you want to like be a part of this super interesting, like groundbreaking scene that is vaporwave, and then just be like, oh, but like, it's actually not good. Like, what's really good is doing what MGMT did in 2008, in 2020. It doesn't make any fucking sense.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And I mean, like, yeah, like, if you're going to be dead, like, there's ways to make new music with, like, in the traditional, I guess you would say, sense of, like, actually recording your own instruments and writing your own songs and stuff, but to actually, like, progress it, you know, to make it sound new. And there's even, like, even to the point of, like, there are modern takes on the idea of, like, recreating old 90s music that don't involve like chill, relaxed synth sounds and like washed out hip hop beats, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I realize that half of this show so far has been me just being like a 100 Gex stan, but it's like, that's like a form of nostalgia. Like, what they're doing is a form of nostalgia baiting, or like trying to get you off based off of like nostalgia for that old, those old types of music, but it's a totally fresh way of doing that. So like, it's the same thing as what MGMT was doing, but it's just totally new. Like, it's a new angle of like all of that music. So like, yeah, like tapping into like the funky sort of like tape cassette hiss aspects of old music in the same way that all of these like 80s revival, 80s funky indie music bands were doing it a decade ago. Like, if you want to do that, there's new ways of doing it. There are people that are still doing it in any way right now, today.
Yeah, and it seems fans of those artists, like, yeah. I think another one, do you know about, like, The Garden? My old roommate was, like, super into them. They're, like, a newer, like, indie band, but it's, like, it's totally, like, it's just 80s retroism, like, nostalgia. There's another band called, what are they called? They have an album called Toxic Planet. But, yeah, it's just, like, for fans of those artists, it's, like, just get into Vaporwave. It's way cooler. Like, it's, like, a much more interesting thing. Like, and if you're really into like that like 80s sound, just like listen to those fucking 80s artists. Like 80s funk is so amazing.
Like, yeah, it's so good.
Because and when so much of it is undiscovered and like just fucking dope. Like,
yeah, there's so much crate digging you can do. There's even more like the when indie bands like George Clanton is doing on this album are trying to tap into like these old sounds, but do it in a way that makes you feel nostalgic, or do it in a way with a kind of like a little wink and a nod, you know, ironically reproduce that like 90s sound.
Yeah.
There are bands and there are like acts that recreate that sound, but do it like without the irony and do it like sincerely. And I like that music better. Like this is the most plebe shit that I've ever admitted to anyone, but like the new Bruno Mars album is like fucking like good. It's good because it's like a throwback to all that 80s music. Like it's just ripping off Michael Jackson and stuff, but it's not, there's no irony. There's no tongue in cheekness to it. It's just like trying to really fucking make that style of music as it was like the real spirit of it, of like just like jubilation. Not like, fondly, it's not like you're trying to fondly remember a party that your dad had in the 80s when you weren't born yet and think, oh wow, wasn't that a great time. It's like you were actually at that party, you know, and that to me is like vital and good.
Yeah, it's not like ironically getting this guy from this band that like nobody likes, but you're like, well, I still fucking love this band, bro.
Yeah, it's like, you know, you don't like that band. You just like them because you think it's super funny and hip to like it.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Yeah, so I'm getting a general vibe of scorn for the new George Clanton album. And I was not impressed.
There's one track, what is it? It's The Prelude, The Time of Wandering Prelude. It's only like 30 seconds. Yeah. That song's great. It sounds like a Beach Boys. I love that shit.
Yeah. I like the Beach Boys-esque vocals on Time of Wandering. I thought they were very well done. It's just by that time in the album, I had already had my fill of what it was.
There's nothing conceptually interesting going on here.
No. Yeah. No. Yeah, throw the shit in the trash. I'm done.
All right.
Zero out of ten, George.
I'm interested for his next solo project.
Okay.
What did you think about that new HKE, the little single thing? It was like three tracks. It's on, just for some background, it's called I Am by HKE, and it's on a label called Forgot Imprint, which you can find on Bandcamp, a label out of Illinois, apparently. And it's like three tracks. The whole thing is like 9 minutes long, and it's just sort of like dark, dirty acid house music. I actually liked it a lot, but...
Fuck. Well, I didn't listen to it. I thought you were talking about the other one that you put down. Downpour Ritual by Pure Life.
Well, yeah, okay. Well, there's... So, yeah, sorry, HKE... Shit. Well, no, this is interesting because HKE, he has a thing on Instagram. Let me find it. HKE's Instagram is LucidHKE.
Yeah.
And he said, the statement, 2020 plus. HKE is, like, a famed vaporwave artist known for having, like, several, like, many, many, many aliases. Like, over 70, like, fucking aliases. And going into 2020, he is dropping all of them. and only releasing music under two different names, the first being HKE, which is where he will release, it says on here, techno/acid/experimental/dream tech. I think he should just erase that and say hard vapor, personally. And then sure. and then Hong Kong Express will release ambient/dream punk music.
Okay.
So HKE, or Hong Kong Express, has been gearing up to release the next Hong Kong Express album, which is supposed to be like a big statement of intent for him. He sort of released his first teaser, which is one track on a compilation put out by Pure Life Tapes. Here, I'm trying to pull it up. The compilation is called Downpour Ritual. And
yeah,
Hong Kong Express has the first track. It's the whole compilation is a tribute to the dream punk artist Sangam, who apparently needs money so he can continue making music. Sounds sketchy to me, but whatever. I don't give a fuck.
Sure.
Yeah. But what did you think of that track? What did you think?
Yeah. So like this, in addition to the last last HKE project that we reviewed, I think 2 episodes ago.
Yeah.
I really like. I'm digging this like return to form thing that he's trying to do a lot. I think a lot of like the stuff that I've heard that is I interpret it to be a like an attempt at like a return to form for him is like has learned a lot from all of the other crazy experiments that he did.
Yeah.
And it seems like it's a lot more rich and like interesting. So like this is definitely one example of that where it's really just this like 2-minute-long ambient thing. But I felt like the synths, it's only one like main synth pad that he's using, and just the sound of rain, right?
I think it's like the same synth pad that he uses on 2814. It's like very reminiscent of that, or his album HK. Yeah.
But around like, the same time. I feel like that, like, it's just like, it sounds a little bit more gritty, a little bit more like metallic than I remember from all of those. From, 2814 and, Hong Kong, like, the very first albums that, like, you know, admittedly, I didn't listen to that much, but I definitely did listen to, while I was in Tokyo, I listened to those a lot, and it, like, the production sounds better, and I think that I feel that just that synth pad that he has on there, because that's really the whole song, more or less, is just, like, I don't know, a little bit grittier, a little bit, it just sounds like it sounds a little bit more refined, and I liked it a lot.
Yeah, I'm really excited for like his next, for when he really finally releases his next Hong Kong Express album. For people that don't know, he recently released his the first Hong Kong Express album is called Romantic Dream, but it's in Chinese, and he recently put that on Spotify. And that's like one of the most important Vaporwave albums of all time. It's the first album that was on Dream Catalog. It's the one that has that Zappin' Rogers sample. It has that sample of that Wong Kar Wai movie. It's so fucking good. And he just recently put it on Spotify. So if you search Hong Kong Express on Spotify, it's, I think, the second album that pops up. Any Vaporwave fan should like listen to that album. It's like really incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I liked it. I think the a lot of the problems that I have with like ambient music in general and ambient music when it's in its vaporwave form is that like it sounds pretty and it sounds ambient, but there's not much like going on. It's not like I feel like a lot of ambient music, if I took out all of the, I mean, I realize this defeats the point of ambient music, but if I just played those notes on a piano, it wouldn't sound beautiful. But this composition sounds very pretty. Mm-hmm. It sounds kind of like the best, sort of like my favorite tracks off of the Aphex Twin Selected Ambient Works Volume 2, where it's like, it's not just the tone of the synths that makes it sound pretty. It's like the chord progression that they're using is actually good too.
I think there's a thing with ambient music that it's like very heady, and it's supposed to be considered like super like intense and like sort of fucking, what's the word, like it's supposed to be like a lot of like new classical music is classified as ambient music, and when you see reviews of ambient music, it's always these like super old dudes that are like super out of touch putting out these albums that nobody fucking listens to, that like nobody gives a shit about, and HKE and like Dream Catalog, they've been creating like like young people making really good ambient music for like years now, and it still hasn't been represented at all in like the like industry of ambient music and like any best of lists. And
mainstream ambient music.
Yeah, it's like only a matter of time before 2814 gets their due as like the without a doubt greatest ambient project of the last 10 years. Like, there's nothing that even comes close. Like, so many more people have heard that than have heard like the Disintegration Loops or something.
Yeah.
Like, it's so much more of a big thing, you know? Like, why are people so fucking like still talking about music for airports, you know? Like, that shit doesn't matter anymore. It's so far gone. This is like actually a movement.
I think that's definitely, like, this is the first time, or at least, you know, our generation is the first time that we have, like, a spontaneous relation to ambient music, whereas, like, before everybody, I mean, like, if you listened to actual ambient music, chances are you were, like, a classically trained musician who was hearing, like, the latest advancements in
like musical experimentation or something. But there has to be something like
28, totally
the 2814 YouTube video, like the original YouTube video of that album, has like more views than like almost any other music album on YouTube. You know, it's like if you looked at the charts in that way, it's fucking huge. Like, so many people have listened to that while they're like studying or going to sleep, like just surfing the internet. You know, that's really what ambient music is and what it should be, and it shouldn't just be weird 40-year-olds dicking around on. They're fucking synthesizers, you know?
Yeah. But I mean, like, we have like an actual emotional relationship to ambient music because it's snuck into like film soundtracks and like other various things that like we uncritically consumed. And now, instead of like, whereas an older generation would hear ambient music and be like, ah, yes, this is like the latest frontiers of music, or this is like a way to really add like dynamic intensity to like a film soundtrack, we're just like, oh yeah, like I remember watching that anime movie that had like just one synthesizer note playing repeatedly for like 20 minutes to build suspense.
So
like it's not new, and we have like a real spontaneous relationship to it.
Because I know I've listened to like HKE was doing podcasts where he was doing the History of Dream Catalog podcast, which was only available to patrons. I literally paid $5 a month to listen to this podcast, and he just stopped doing it. But yeah, his whole thing was that he was like drunk in his apartment, like listening to the Blade Runner soundtrack, and he was like pissed off that like there isn't like a movement of like young artists trying to make music like this. And then he created it. He literally created that with Dream Catalog. And totally fucking amazing. But yeah, I don't have anything else about HKE, really. I'm sure we'll get much more into HKE later.
Yeah, once the new record drops. When's the new record dropping?
Nobody has any idea, man. He just keeps saying that he's working on it.
All right. Well, I'll listen to the short album, because sorry, that got buried in our Messenger feed.
And oh, it's all good. It's literally like three tracks of like Acid House. I'm sure you'd like it if you liked the last one. It's really good. Do you want to go into the playlists we made for each other? Second iteration of this segment.
Yeah, this weekly segment, which we have yet to find a name for, but as soon as I find a good name, we should start naming all of our segments, by the way.
This is the playlist segment. That's the name.
No. We got to have something better than that. We'll think of it later. Anyways, where do you want to start?
Well, you hit me up and you made the playlist for me before I made the playlist for you. And you specifically said, there's a lot of advanced material on here. And I got to say, bro, it's pretty goddamn advanced. I don't know who any of these artists are. I was pretty blown away by both of the Perfume tracks are like super dope. Perfume is like obviously like super fucking cool.
Oh, yeah. I mean... So like that first track that was on there, I was just driving around listening to,
I love how they like fuck with the rhythm. So like the rhythm to it changes like over and over and over again.
So the name of that track in Japanese is Poririzimu, which is polyrhythm. The whole song is based on the concept of polyrhythms and having strange time signatures in your song. So it's a concept song about polyrhythms, and that whole, so when I listened to that, I was like, oh my God, this is basically like a chopped and screwed J-pop song. I have to show this to Morgan. It's not, I mean, it's not screwed, but it's definitely chopped.
Oh, yeah.
So yeah, that whole part where it's like, Pony, zoom,
yeah, it keeps changing, bro. Oh my God.
Yeah, so that's all, yeah.
I've got to say, I listened to it like.
Intentional. And that whole time they're saying.
Yeah, I listened to it right after work. Like, I got on the train and started listening to it, and the train starts moving, like, super fast, and I'm, like, hearing. It was pretty cool. It was pretty fucking dope.
Yeah, yeah. So I really, yeah, so that breakdown, I listened to that, and I was like, oh, yeah, Morgan's got it. I got to listen to it. So, yeah, that's the story behind that. So before, I want you to give your thoughts on the playlist, but before you do that, I just want to say that this playlist specifically is the result of both going into like getting deeper into like PC music and nightcore music, and also religiously playing this game called MyMy in the local arcade in town. MyMy is basically like a rhythm game. So like imagine it's like it's an LCD screen, but it's like this big circle. I'd say the circle would be the size of like a tire, like a car tire. And then surrounding the circle are these 8 buttons. And you put on a song, and then on the screen, these little orbs go to in the direction of various buttons, and you have to hit the buttons in time with the song. And so I've been playing that every weekend, trying to get super fucking good at it. Because of quarantine, like I can't leave the prefecture to go travel or anything, which is what I want to do. So instead, I got to do that. But it's super fun. And they have a bunch of Japanese pop songs from, like, all over the place. And, like, you can't fucking find, like, half the songs that I wanted to put on this playlist are not on Spotify because they're, like, anime soundtracks from, like, 2015.
Vaporwave man's problem.
Yeah, so, like, it's the Vaporwave man's dilemma. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So a couple of those J-pop songs are the ones that I did manage to find from that. And then the other half of that is, just going through, like I just listen to, like, I will, like, put on, like, a Dorian Electra song and let Spotify create a playlist for me based on it. And then just, like, write down the, or, like, take a note of the songs that I really like and then try to listen to those artists. So, yeah. The Pom Poms and, like, Caroline Polachek.
Bro, that Pom Poms track is fucking lit.
Right? Right.
Oh my God.
Yeah. That one is so good. Oh my God. When that came on, I was like, yeah, totally. That is the type of song that
I was riding on the train. It was like going super fast, and I was like, oh my fucking God, dude. Mm-hmm. No, that's like such a dope fucking song.
Such a slap. Like, that's the kind of song that taps into my nostalgia banks in a very good way. But yeah, so that would be, I would say, the dual genesis of this playlist. But yeah, I want to hear your thoughts and what you thought.
Yeah, I'll link the playlist in the show description. The Pom Poms track was really good. After that, the Nightcore remix of All the Things She Said, which is already like a great song. Like, it's a dope song. I played it at work, and like one of my coworkers was like mad, and he was like, "It's just a sped up version." It's like, no, but it's. It's cooler that it's sped up.
Yeah, it's better when it's sped up.
Yeah. That was so dope. The Goopy track, that's like some fucking, I'm so lost, I can't even remember what it's called. The fucking shit that Skrillex makes.
Some dubstep.
Yeah, that's some dubstep.
That was some straight up dubstep.
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Really intense. The Caroline Polachek song was very pretty. Liked that one a lot. Oh, the Kumi Koda song was I didn't really like it at first, and then when that beat switch hits, like, it's very early 2000s like pop. I can tell why you like it a lot.
Yeah, I specifically put it on there because I was like I didn't know that like there was a J-pop version of Shakira in 2006. You know, I was very surprised about it. And yeah, I
didn't realize it was like a Japanese song. I thought it was like an American song.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, that shit is fucking dope. What else? The Erin Cartier. Is that just is that like a Sophie alias? Because it sounded just like a Sophie song to me.
Yeah, it's definitely like that. I think, I remember I was telling you, like, there has sprung up suddenly like a bunch of like, I don't know how to describe it. It's like grunge metal dudes who are like kind of riding the 100 Gex like aesthetic coattails of that whole thing. Like there are a bunch of different artists like that. It's not just like, I think Aaron Cartier is like kind of one of the forefronts of it, but like I was listening to, like I listened to the 100 Gex like original EP and let it just like finish and create a playlist for me. And like, there were a bunch of different, it's like depressed like dudes that have like lip piercings and like fucking drink Arizona iced tea. But it's all like super like crazy synthesizer music, whereas previously they would have been singing over like grunge music.
Okay,
it's really crazy. Yeah, there were like, it was not just Aaron Cartier, it was like a bunch of different dudes. So yeah, it's like a whole burgeoning, I don't even know if it's a scene, I have no idea, but yeah,
well, that, I hope it's a
that's scene. Not, it is, I'm pretty sure it's a scene. I just have to figure out how to like locate it. Oh, there's one other guy that's
of course the Dorian Electra song, super dope.
Yeah
the Tokyo Girl style song, bro.
Yeah
that's just dirty, bro.
Yeah, I really like that song. Yeah. Actually, I was wondering if you were gonna like that. It's kind of like a little generic, a little like just kind of by the numbers J-pop.
I just like I liked it.
Yeah
is this like modern or is it like old?
Tokyo Girl style I think is like mid 2000s, like 2000s era. I'd have to look that up. But yeah, that was a song that's on the arcade game that I play.
Oh, nice. The Kiara Pami Pami song is really good too.
Yeah, I really like that song. But yeah, like, you know,
I can see why Death's Dynamic Shroud sampled them so heavily.
Yeah. They're she is like a hugely influential, like when you think of like weird Japanese pop music, like, oh, it's so weird, it's so kitschy, it's so crazy, that's like all her, that's her thing, she made that.
Okay.
Yeah, she was super influential on Lady Gaga. Like if you like look up pictures of Kiara Pamu Pamu in like the early 2000s, she's doing the same shit where it's like shock value outfits and like crazy music videos. So she's definitely like the OG version of Lady Gaga. But it should totally be noted that like this is not Kiara Pamu Pamu, and that song specifically is not like patrician at all. It's like entry tier J-pop. Like anybody who knows anything about J-pop would know about that.
Oh, okay.
So I don't want to contaminate this thoroughly patrician podcast by, like, I don't want to be pretending to be something I'm not here.
Well, it was a great playlist.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I've been enjoying putting these little playlists together because I've been listening to a lot of new music lately and I want to share it with you.
That's awesome, because I find myself just like fucking stretching for shit. I'm just like, oh god, what have I not? I feel like I've shown you everything that I like, so already.
Yeah, I mean, you definitely have, well, you probably have at some point by just playing it in the background, but like, there's a bunch of, like, off of that Vaporwave playlist, there's a bunch of artists that I don't know, so you should send me just some random Vaporwave shit, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Here, I'm going to take a quick piss, and then we can talk about
quick piss. Playlist.
All right, here, yes. We'll be right back.
Indeed.
All right, I'm back.
All right, here we go. So, once again, listening to this playlist was, like, such a, like, blast to the past for me because I was so, like, nostalgic for living back in Portland because, like, I haven't been listening to the same music that I was back then, and like this like kind of like rap music, mm-hmm. You know, this trap shit is not really something that gets played over here in Japan. So I found myself while I was listening to this playlist, like walking around. I listened to this playlist while I did my laundry at like a really shady coin laundry place.
A laundromat
right by my house. Yeah, at like 11 at night, and it was like 95 degrees and 99% humidity. And so I was just like sweating like profusely, like I was dripping sweat, doing my laundry and listening to this fucking thing. Like I thought I was gonna fucking die listening
I lost my laundry key and had to do laundry at a laundromat for a couple weeks. It's a very interesting feeling.
Mm-hmm.
Laundromats are kind of quaint, they're kind of cool, but yeah.
Yeah, well, it's like something, it's like a place where you do your private shit, but in public. So it's a strange,
that's
strange juxtaposition. Yeah. So I loved that Slim Reaper track. I know that you've played that for me before.
That's like the dirtiest, most disgusting song I've ever fucking heard.
Like when Space Ghost Perp says that he's going to like murder a hoe or hold somebody hostage for ransom, it's like I believe it 100%. Like I just fucking believe it 100% that he will and has done all those things. So very scary, like.
Yeah, like, I mean, totally there's something. The interesting thing about the track is that his rapping is like so shitty, but he's rapping about real, like really intense shit. But the beat is like so dirty and fucked, and like goes in so many different ways, and it's just like, it's definitely like a production heavy rap song. It's really good.
Yeah. Yeah, I like, if you like listen to that song closely, you can kind of make out a chord progression, and the chord progression sounds a lot like the remix to Ignition chord progression.
Okay.
So it sounds like it's like this really fucked up, like, you know, remix to Ignition is like the classic summer vibes, we're just having fun like thing, and this is just like a fucking disgusting twisted version of that. So I really like that. So the chord progression does, it's not exactly like the Remix to Ignition one, but it has that same vibe of like, this is a summer jam song, you know, this is like we're out barbecuing, except it's fucked up and screwed the fuck up.
Yeah, it's some Miami.
So I really like that one. Yeah, I was surprised that you put this Bambina song on there, because it's just such a like a 2000s indie song. I didn't think you'd be into it.
Bambina is really cool. Bambina is the sister of a Raider Clan affiliate underground rapper called Shakewell, which is how I found out about her music. This is the only song I know, but it's really cool. Yeah.
Huh. Interesting. Yeah.
The music video is really intense. You should look up the music video. It's really funny.
Oh yeah, I will. I thought it was just kind of refreshing, and a good way to kind of clean my palate for the next shit that was going to happen. Because I thought like this playlist was, there's a lot of like rap music on here that I feel is like so, I don't know, like advanced. Like the I'm gonna list all of the ones off that I thought were like really interesting, like interesting in the way that I find PC music and like all that other shit interesting, like the At the Beach, Bananas, Some About You, and A Dime Bags is all like really weird, like really strange, and I thought it was really interesting.
Yeah, so At the Beach by Cartier God and Bananas by Digighouls. So they're sort of like, from what I really don't understand much about this, but from what I understand, there's like sort of this new vanguard of like really experimental trap music, where the Some About You also sort of falls into that area, but it's like a little bit more mainstream with 645AR. But it's all based around this collective called Fax Gang, F-A-X-G-A-N-G. And all of their covers are like anime and from what I can tell, it's mostly like white dudes from the suburbs or like black dudes from the suburbs sort of making it. But they're making really like really fun and interesting, like sort of postmodern trap music. I want to show you, or I want to send you that. The At the Beach song, the whole tape, the tape that's from is like 20 songs long, and it's like it's the most Metro Zoo-y thing I've heard like since Metro Zoo. Like it's so indebted to Metro Zoo, which is really interesting because like I feel like nobody really has ever taken that mantle up of like sort of being like these swag pimp rappers, these sort of like postmodern swag pimp art rappers, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
And unabashedly about swag in 2020, you know? Pretty fucking crazy.
Yeah, no, I got that. Like, there was the production values of that song are very lo-fi, but it has all of the like kind of instrumentation of like a modern trap song. Yeah, that was really, really cool. I definitely can see, like, that shit being the new sort of underground answer to, like, trap, this sort of trap, the trap zeitgeist, if you will.
Yeah, they're really big on like the 4chan music forum right now. So they're gotcha. They're really coming up, but I don't really know much about them.
Hmm. Yeah, so I really liked, At the Beach. Deep End, I was listening to Deep End while I was folding my laundry, and I was like, oh, this is really good. This must be that single that Morgan was mentioning about where it was Young Thug with Chris Brown. I thought that you would put one of those songs on there. And then I looked up and it's like, oh no, this is Lil Baby. And I get the Fantano criticism that Lil Baby sounds exactly like Young Thug, you know?
Yeah, but why wouldn't you want to sound exactly like Young
Yeah,
Thug?
Yeah, yeah. I really liked that song a lot. Like, I just, you know, as all of the kind of Young Thug vibes that you want. And, like, Young Thug's music is different enough and has enough points that you could go off of that you could create. I think you could feasibly create a whole Young Thug-based subgenre, you know? So I think that Lil Baby is totally justified in, like, being sort of like this protege. And it's like
he is literally a protege of Young Thug.
Yeah,
Young Thug signed
Yeah, like you can take the Young Thug sound and do so much with it that it's not just biting Young Thug to sound like Young Thug. You know, like you can't hate on all of the other hip hop artists that, to an outsider, sound exactly the same. You know.
Yeah.
So yeah, I kind of like it. It's encouraging to me that there's people that are taking Young Thug's sound and like. Making stuff, even if it sounds almost the same, but they're still taking it, you know? They're still trying to promote it.
Again, if you look at that whole album is really dope, the album that came off of. It's called Drip Harder, and, like, yes, Fantano famously, like, panned the shit out of it, but it's, like, it's like the one of the best trap albums, like, in recent memory. It's really fucking good.
Yeah,
Fantano. And Fantano can lick my nuts.
Yeah, dude, Fantano, we're coming for you, okay?
Yeah, fuck you.
Yeah, we're about to be the number one music reviewers. And then I think the standout actually for the whole playlist for me was that Snow Beach by Rat King.
That's some old shit. That's from like 2011.
Really? I love that song. I really liked the,
That's some New York shit.
Yeah, to me it sounded like, I loved the Rasta man, ya man, ya vibin type shit that was on the ball. You know,
yeah.
That instrumentation is like so, reggae inspired, but dubby, you know, and I really like that.
Yeah.
And it's not just like the horns. Like I really like that heavy, like bass. It's like a sine wave sound. It's just wah, 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 wah. Oh yeah. Really good. Like that one. I listen to that one all the time, honestly.
Nice. Yeah. I saw you made your, cause I'm following you on Spotify now. I saw you made a new Slaps playlist.
Yes.
And you put that on there, yeah.
Yeah, I'm trying to make a better Slaps playlist. Some About You was another one that I was like, oh yeah, this is really crazy experimental shit, like shit that I ain't heard before.
Yeah, 645 AR is coming up. I put a track from him on the last playlist, but he sort of invented the squeaky voice rapping. That's his whole style, is that he pitches his voice up so much that you can't understand him.
Yeah. That Love Talking. Great.
Classic. 80s Japanese funk.
Yes.
Beautiful.
Yeah, totally. And what else? I'm going to be honest with you. I skipped over the Sonic Youth song. I just refuse to have that. I'm not going to have that.
That's fine.
Yeah, and then I'm really digging these like classic country songs that you're pulling out of I don't know where.
I'm pulling them straight out of the American canon. These are straight out of the Americana. This is the music that Americans listen to, baby.
Yeah, that's just another great, like, I love the lyrics on that song, and like I'm hating the things that you do, like, yeah, so great. Yeah, the Huncho Jack. I was surprised that you put a Huncho Jack song on here, because I figured that would be way too plebe tier trap music for you.
No, okay, so the thing, I actually have a thing about. The thing about that album is it's like fucking, it's Travis Scott and Quavo's collaborative album.
Yeah.
Back from like 2017, which was like or 2016, I don't know, but it was like right in this era where like a bunch of trap dudes were making collaborative albums. I think it was right after Future and Drake did theirs, and that album got like panned. Like everybody fucking hated it, but I always really liked it because it just sounds like trap, like soul music, you know? Like they like go so far with the like auto-tune that it's like sounds so robotic, and like it just doesn't sound like anything else you've ever heard before. And I think, and it just sounds super futuristic. And I like, I actually really like that Huncho Jack Huncho album. I think it's I think it's in like 20 years, it'll be looked at as like one of the best. But like for now, nobody understands it. It was too advanced, you know?
Yeah, so I liked that. I definitely pick up on what you're saying, that it was like it was from a time when there was still like trap music definitely wasn't the, like it was coming up hard and it was coming up fast, but it wasn't like the zeitgeist. It wasn't the traditional thing. And like that instrumentation sounds like a combination of like an earlier, like 2011, like A$AP Rocky song with like more modern trap beats.
Yeah.
Production, you know? So yeah, it's like definitely something that you wouldn't hear very much today. And I really liked the Z Loopers song. That's just like a classic, because I am, like, I will admit, your hip hop tastes obviously are much more patrician than mine are. So like that Z Loopers song is very much a classic. It's just like a sample and some guys rapping over it, and it's like a soul sample, really easy to enjoy. And I loved the Earl verse.
It's one of his dirtiest verses.
Yeah, such a good verse. And I like while I was listening to that, I realized, like, Earl's flow sounds like, you know how, like, when you listen to, like, one of Brendan's songs?
Or any shitty white rapper that you know.
Yeah.
Any of your friends that are like, white that are trying to have rap careers.
Yeah. It's like they're, maybe they can write lyrics, but when they completely fail to understand that, like, when you are rapping, you have to project your voice. You have to kind of, it, like, rapping is singing. You have to, like, yell. You have to be at a volume and an intensity level. But, like, dudes that are, like, nervous about performing like that, they kind of come in with, like, a, like, blah, 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 like, they're mumbling. Not, like, mumble rap, but they're just, like, they're not delivering the line, you know?
Yeah, they sound like they're whispering.
Yeah, they sound like people that are not quite confident in their ability of rapping.
I'm very, like, guilty of this as well, because I've made rap songs in the past that suffer the same fucking problems,
Yeah. So, like, but, like, Earl Sweatshirt has the same thing, but, it, like, he has, like, he sounds the same. He sounds like he's not quite, like, he's not really committed to it. Like, he's not, like, he's definitely not, like, Tupac shouting into the mic. He's, like, not quite performing. He's still reserved about it, you know? And you can hear that on his verse on that, where he's, like, sort of kind of sheepishly performing his song. But when you contrast that, like, it makes sense with his persona, and then you contrast it with the fact that his lyrics are just genius, beautiful poetry. Like just, like, set 5D chess metaphors, you know,
or even the simplest shit. He said, so it's never ever all over. That's such a genius fucking line, bro. It's never ever all over. Ooh.
Whew. But yeah, so great Z Loopers track. Many revelations were had. and I loved that God Help Me. That's like my new favorite Lil B track. Love that.
Man. You can hear his soul. You can hear the sincerity in his words, man.
Yeah.
That's from Lil B's. That's like one of the standout tracks from God's Father, which is, like, without a doubt, one of, like, probably the best Lil B mixtape.
Yeah.
It's definitely the one that got the most press. Yeah.
I really liked that song a lot, and I will be putting that. That's on my new Slabs playlist.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. I liked that one. Hell Dwellin' was, you showed me Aethelwulf, like, when we first moved in together, and then I was, like, I would always come up to you and be like, who is that, like, rapper who's, like, he's, like, Wolf something? And you would be like, oh, Xavier Wolf. And then you would play Xavier Wolf. But I was trying to find Aethelwulf.
Okay, so, well, before you embarrass yourself, Aethelwulf and Xavier Wolf are the same person.
Ah, shit.
Yeah, he was Aethelwulf when he was in Raider Clan. And then he left Raider Clan and changed his name to Xavier Wolf.
Okay, well, You know, you can cut that out in post.
But he did, he changed his flow. So you're not completely wrong. He literally changed his entire flow.
Okay.
And basically became like a different artist. So you're, I understand where you're coming from, but yeah, they are the same person. Yes.
Oh, Jesus. No, that's still pretty embarrassing. Anyways, the Chromatic song, I liked that Chromatic song. I don't remember it from the, Twin Peaks. Like, I don't remember it from Twin Peaks Volume 3, but,
I just like the end of the first episode.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I liked that you put that on there just to stoke the flames of our, bitter, bitter disagreements about the new Twin Peaks.
I wish we were doing this podcast when that was coming out. Imagine the arguments we would have had every week. Dude,
for real, yeah. That would be... yeah, that would be... people would pay to see two young men just rip into each other.
About Twin Peaks.
About Twin Peaks Season 3. Yeah.
Dope.
Yeah, so that was a nice little... Once again, it's like... You introduced me to Twin Peaks while we were at Grace Manor. And we watched season 3 of Twin Peaks at Grace Manor. And, like, so my Twin Peaks experience is, like, entirely localized within Grace Manor. So this is, once again, like, a blast from the past nostalgia playlist for me.
Nice.
But, yeah, other than that, Ennui, good. Shooters is good. And, of course, my mind went blank. Knowing the story behind My Mind Went Blank is really fleshes out the listening experience. I showed that song to one of my really, really nerdy friends who didn't get it at all. I just started playing it in the car just to piss her off because I knew she would not like it and think it was really stupid. And I wanted to, like, because, like, she's, like, you know, like a young left-leaning college graduate. So I knew that if I played it to her and then explained, like, you don't understand. This song is about the experience of a black man who suffers from post-traumatic stress disorder, blacks out, and then commits violent crimes, and he can't remember. That she would, you know, be like, oh, well, I guess that's kind of cool. You know, so, yeah.
It's from DJ Screw's album, All Screwed Up, by the way. It's incredible. But, yeah, it's a super sad song about a dude, about a black man with PTSD that, yeah, blacks out and commits violent crime and doesn't remember that he committed such heinous acts of murder and, yeah. One of the darkest things you can ever fucking...
Yeah.
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 Incredible.
Yeah, sad. I mean, the fact that it's like a plea. It's like a, it's like after he's got caught and he's trying to explain his actions, you know?
Yeah.
It's not, he's not proud of it. He's just trying to say, like, you don't understand, man. Like, you don't understand. My mind, I don't have any control over this. Yeah. My mind goes blank and I commit atrocities. Like, I don't... Yeah, like, that's like... like,
so
how...
Dark.
That's the darkest fucking shit in the world. You can't get any darker than that.
Yeah.
A man so who can't, who has such a serious mental problem. Yeah. Yeah. So that was a dark way to end that playlist, but man, great playlist. Really enjoyed. I think, like, I'm definitely going to follow up on a lot of the Cartier. Remember it?
Look up his album. It's so fucking good, dude.
Yeah. Cartier.
So guy. Metro Zoo.
Yes. Yeah, that's 645 AR. Yeah, that was all really, really good.
Swag.
Yep.
All right, well, I don't have much else. I think we're all tapped out. I think SlimeWire is back. And
SlimeWire is back, baby.
Coming back, coming forward, going forward.
Yes.
I think we're going to make this back. Going forward.
We're coming back and we're going forward.
And we're going to do this weekly. And here and there, you know, maybe we'll miss a week here and there.
But, absolutely.
Because of random bullshit, like moving or whatever. But, you know, we're always going to be here for you. We're always going to be here for all of you wonderful listeners. And we can't wait to educate you on all of the good Vaporwave and all of the good other music besides Vaporwave. And also to give you the correct political opinions. And if you disagree with us, you're literally stupid.
You're a fascist scum.
Yeah, you're fascist shit. Pieces of shit.
Slime ball. Yeah, absolutely. Right. Yes, in a time of grave uncertainty... SlimeWire will always be with you.
And we will prevail.
We leave you. Right. Oh, we will prevail.
All right. Sayonara.
Sayonara.
chamber. You a thang, just beware of him who walks behind the corner. Cause my brain was designed in my brain before I was ever born. And you was right when you said I had a head with no screws. But it was tight when I stopped flexing them hip hop blues. Boo, how you gon' say I can't play with the big boy? And all the big boys play with all my tumble toys. You better flip the script and get with this. And if that booty don't do you, then go dip me. Yeah, take a walk through this jungle. And you can follow me all the way to shop if you want to. But you ain't know me till I got back. So that explains when you approach me. My mind went blank. It's hard to think.
It's hard to think when my mind goes blank. You just can't.